The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Well, today's program, we're going to talk about cryptocurrencies. You obviously have heard about Bitcoin, but how about some of these other digital coin offerings and how they might impact you?
And we're also going to talk to a relatively young grandmother in the Bay Area who's supporting both a daughter and a granddaughter who needs to move to a lower income area. How much taxes will she owe on her home
and
in capital gains?
And she'll owe some, yeah. Stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matter.
And now, Barron's ranked top 100 independent advisors. It's time for Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you are here with us today as we're talking about financial planning stuff. Both myself and my co-host, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself, and we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air. And by the way, if the weekends are not good, because I was just talking to someone the other day, says, I don't hear you as much as I'd like to because I find myself not in the car that much Saturdays when your show runs. You can always listen to this through a podcast. Very simple to do.
In fact, so my teenagers, when I talk about listening to the radio, they stare at me. Well, they're not even, some of them are past teens now, come to think of it, but they just stare at me as to why you would conventionally, because they listen to podcasts.
If I asked either one of my two older kids, college kids, if they listen to the radio.
But we are on a terrestrial radio station.
Which we love.
But I listen.
That's why our kids have it all wrong.
Yeah. But I listen to the stations that we're on on my iPhone.
Yeah.
All the time. Because we're in multiple markets and I want to hear.
And Pat wants to hear himself.
I don't listen to myself.
It's like,
in
man.
Multiple markets.
So what I do. Such a good program.
First, I tune into Denver because they come on earlier in the day and I listen to my show once then and then again and again and again.
Continual loop. And when I'm having trouble sleeping tonight, I just put myself on something that soothing voice of myself puts me right to sleep. Anyway, this is a financial program. We apologize for getting off topic already. But if you'd like to join us, we'd love to take a call from you, answer a question regarding something in your financial world. And I think a part of our objective here is to help people make wise choices, informed choices that are going to lead to help them accomplish the things that they want to accomplish in their lives.
Over the long term and the short term. But oftentimes, people sacrifice long-term stability for short-term pleasures.
Well, the majority of Americans, probably.
Yes.
Yes, I understand. They don't save. I understand. Most people listen are probably savers to this program and are interested in their financial future. That's why they listen to a program.
Or if they're not saving, they're planning on it or trying to figure out how to.
Yeah, so if you'd like to be part of the program.
Well, you were going to start to tell a story.
I met with a couple recently. She had gone back to the workforce. She'd been out of the workforce for a number of years when they had kids, right? Typical. We see this often. And has been really successful in her real estate career.
And had her second job. And when she went back.
Yes, and very successful, also making some pretty good money. And they were friends, and they just kind of wanted to meet with me just as friends, like, help us figure this stuff out. Or suddenly make. And I think they thought that just because they came in to certainly have some money, that life had to be complicated.
Oh.
And they were so relieved after me. We are so relieved because I just gave them some couple basic goals and not over. I think they just figured that they had to make it complicated because they were now coming into some money.
Like bigger houses or nicer cars?
They didn't know. They were talking about all kinds of things. I'm like, they're both like so relieved. That doesn't have to be that complicated. It doesn't have to be that complicated.
It doesn't have to be.
Whether you got 100,000 or 100 million, it doesn't have to be that complicated.
Yes.
It really doesn't. So to join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And we're going to start off in the Bay Area with Sharon. Sharon, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about taxes on the sale of my home.
Okay.
I purchased it about 8 years ago only as an investment for retirement because I had no other means for making money in retirement. So when I sell it, I'll have about a $700,000 profit. And I understand from listening from your show previously that there's a $250,000 deductible for being single, plus any improvements.
That's right.
And the cost of selling the home. So I figure that that's going to leave me about $600,000 in profit. So now I'm wondering just how much taxes I have to pay. I heard there was a capital tax.
Well, what did you pay for the home?
I paid $460,000.
And it's worth how much now?
About 1.1, probably somewhere around that.
So this, from the first blush to look at this, Sharon, you should feel extremely fortunate that you bought a house in the Bay Area and that it's done this well last 8 years, right?
And do you plan on living in the Bay Area? Continuing to live in the Bay Area?
No, I won't be able to afford any kind of home payments, so yeah. I have to buy something outright out of the area. And it has to be something substantial because I take care of my daughter, my granddaughter, my ex-husband, and hopefully my father will be coming shortly.
Oh, that's awful. Wow. Nice. Yeah.
There's a lot of weight here.
And how much money did you put into the house in terms of repairs or upgrades?
Well, I really made a mistake because in the past 8 years, I didn't realize that I should be saving receipts. We did add on a bedroom and a bathroom, and that was about $50,000.
Yeah, well, you still want to keep track of all those things.
Yeah, you want to ballpark it. So $50,000. Anything else that you've done to the home?
At least I do have receipts for the $50,000.
Okay.
Because I kept a binder for the new.
So obviously you addressed it correctly in the fact that you've got $250,000 of capital gain that you can exclude from taxation, but the remaining will be subject to taxes. Fortunately, the maximum capital gains tax rate currently is 15% for federal. State of California are going to be looking at about another 9.3%.
So if we look at, you sell the house for 1.1 and you're paying a 5% commission on this, 5 or 6?
Whatever, yeah.
Okay, 5%. So you're going to probably end up paying taxes of somewhere around $70,000 to $80,000.
Okay.
Because your basis in it is 510. And then we figure out that you're paying about $50,000 to $60,000 in closing costs, so that's 570 minus 1.1 million, right? We could do the math. You're $530,000 minus 250. And who doesn't love listening to math on the radio?
I just think the same thing. I'm watching Pat with his pad. Like, this is exciting.
Who doesn't love math on the radio? In fact, I'm thinking of coming out with a whole new series called Math on the Radio. So if you figure that you're going to pay a little less than a third of that in taxes, it's $70,000 to $80,000. Scott?
Yeah.
Anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would. Is it on the market today?
No, not till next June.
Why?
Because I'm waiting for my granddaughter to finish junior high so she can start high school in a new location.
Here's the thing.
Nobody
knows when this market's going to slow down. Having a home more than double in value in an 8-year period of time is abnormal. Even for the Bay Area, abnormal. You go back the last 50 years, this is very unusual to see this kind of price appreciation in this period of time. And frankly, it's driven. And are you in the South Bay Area?
I'm in Santa Clara.
Okay. Oh, there you go. You answered the question, right? You're right in almost the center of it.
Yes. And it's driven in large part, I hate to say it, in large part for these new technology companies that aren't even public. So there's been some huge hits with Facebook and Google and stuff that have really grown in the last number of years. But there's also a bunch of these companies, these small ones, large company, that are...
I just talked to a guy I talked to him 2 days ago, and he was telling me that he's building a house on the coast and buying another one in Hawaii because he sold his small tech company to a larger tech company.
Was the larger one public yet or private still?
I don't think either one of them were private.
So
or public. Either one of them were public.
Thing. It's been a while since the technology has gone through a downturn, but everything goes through cycles, right? And when technology has its next turn at recession, and someone listening right now is thinking, oh, you guys are crazy.
It's different this time.
Right?
It happens.
I remember it happened. Look, it happened between 2000 and 2002. Dramatic downturn in technology. When that happens, you'll see those real estate prices. I mean, not to predict, but if you're looking at minimizing risk, there would be a high probability of a downturn in real estate prices that would correspond with a downturn in technology.
In your location.
In your
particular
location.
I have been waiting for that. Right. I have been waiting for that and worrying about that. But
well, so far, your timing was perfect.
So why not rent a place for a year? Where do you plan on moving when you move? Are you moving outside the state of California or inside the state of California?
No, probably up to the Folsom area.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, you could buy a house for about half of this in Folsom.
Right.
In Folsom.
Yeah, we do have the brand new Apple build, and that was kind of, you know, in Cupertino, so I was kind of thinking
that's priced
would
in,
probably
though.
Be good.
Now, that's all priced into the market.
Yeah.
That's all priced into the market.
Your house is worth 1.1 based upon all the factors that we know about today.
So if you were a client of mine, we would talk about risk mitigation because you can finish this by selling the house today and renting for a year. And you say, I don't want to spend $5,000 a month on rent. We understand that. But if prices fall in the Bay Area, they will fall in Folsom as well. But we don't know by how much and probably not at the same level. So for the rest of the listeners outside California, they're about two and a half hour distance between each other. And they are two separate areas
in terms of
real estate pricing.
Oh, yeah.
So Sharon, I think that you ought to just say, you know, one in the hand is better than two in the bush. You're not looking for any price appreciation. If you got it, you'd be happy. But if the reason of staying in there is so your granddaughter can finish her last year in the eighth grade, I would.
There's never any warnings. There's never like a yellow light saying, hey, guess what? The downturn's coming. Make a move now. It's like the music can stop instantly. All of a sudden, buyers dry up. And who knows what shock's going to come to the system.
Yeah.
But what we do know is that home prices don't typically go from 460 to 1.1 million in an 8-year period of time.
So if you
and just the way they go up quickly, there's no reason that things couldn't decline at the same.
So either change the plans and have her move, in the middle of the eighth grade, or rent.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Good luck, Sharon.
Good luck, and thank you. That's awfully nice of you to take care of. Yeah. I got the daughter and the granddaughter, but the ex-husband thing kind of threw me.
I know.
It kind of threw me.
But anyway, we won't go there. It's a financial program.
That's awfully nice of you.
Appreciate the call, Sharon.
And there's so many guys out there that were wishing they were your ex-husband, Sharon.
By the way, we're not look, we can't predict market cycles of anything.
No, but this was risk mitigation for
her. But what we can do is say, exactly, what are you trying to accomplish in your life? Just how we started the program. What are you trying to accomplish in your life? Right now, she knows she's in a situation she can accomplish the objectives based upon the equity that she's built up in this home over this last 8 years.
She can cash it out,
1.1.
Pay cash for a new home.
We know that's today. We don't know it tomorrow.
No clue.
And as financial advisors doing this for a couple decades, almost three decades now, I've certainly seen enough situations where people had great intentions, good plans. They could have made the move at one point in time, but they waited, things changed.
Yes.
And it's, the Bay Area, particularly the South Bay.
Oh, crazy. The price appreciation. And parts of Denver as well.
Yeah, but not like.
Not like this.
No, nothing's like.
Not like this.
Nothing's like this.
Nothing.
All right, let's continue on. We're in Granite Bay, Sacramento area with Frank. Frank, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Frank.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Okay, here's my scenario. I'm 66 years old, retired, have a total income a month about $6,000 from Social Security, pension, etc. I own another home that's paid for, and that's included in my $6,000. And this particular home I've been living in for years. I owe $188,000.
Okay.
I have 240,000 cash in the bank that's been sitting there for a while, and then I got about 40,000 in an IRA. And then my question was, should I just kind of leaning to that? My, you know, just like money sitting there, nothing going on with it. I don't really want to invest it anymore. I, you know, lost nothing big, but, you know, a moderate amount of money back in that other turndown. Should I pay off my house, or what are your thoughts on that?
So a couple questions. Are you married?
Yes, uh-huh.
And does your wife receiving Social Security at this time as well?
No, not yet.
Will she? How much will she receive in Social Security?
Well, she's 61, and she was thinking she might want to take Social Security. At 62, and that would give her about 700. And the way I understand it, when I kick the bucket, then she'll be eligible for mine.
Okay.
Half of you. Yeah, yeah, the higher of the two, yes.
So does she have any money in 401ks or IRAs?
Well, that, when I said that 40,000, that's between two of us.
Got it.
Yeah.
So
where did the $240,000 cash come from? Did you have that 5 years ago as well?
No, just from my parents passed away and the inheritance, and we had some of that money obviously just saved and
got
it's
it.
Just been kind how of sitting there, right?
How much did you inherit?
Oh, I'm thinking about 75,
okay.
80,000.
All right. So I would pay it off.
I would as well.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
But I wouldn't spend the money I was putting on the mortgage. I would save it.
So right now your mortgage is probably 3.5-4%. It's low, correct?
Interest rate.
3.5.
Yeah, 3.5. So part of you can be saying, well, this doesn't seem very. Why would I want to pay off something that's such a low interest rate? Well,
right.
Only if you could take your cash. It's $188,000 you own the house. Only if you could take that and invest it at a rate higher than 3.5%. You can, but not guaranteed and not over a short period of time. So,
yeah, and what you told us about that your experience previously would lead us to believe that your risk tolerance was close to zero. So,
right, when you get up, it's really low now.
Yeah, so, and the money in the bank is earning a quarter of a percent or?
A percent, whatever, even if you squeeze it. You get
there
one.
Is a little picture of you down at the local bank where everyone stops and kisses on the way out. Because
you realize that Frank borrowed 188 grand for us and put it back on deposit?
And
he's paying 3.5
and
we're paying
three and a half. And we're paying him a quarter? And they all stop and they give it a little kiss and say, Frankie, thank you so much.
I guess that'll all change if I pull my money out and pay the house off.
Right? We like the idea of paying the house.
We love the idea. What I would do is you're making those house payments now. Try not to spend them. Or better yet, I'd spend them. And assuming your wife is in good health.
Well, is she working currently?
No, she does.
Okay.
Well, defer her Social Security to age 70. Pay off that mortgage. Spend it. Defer her Social Security to age 70, assuming that she's got a normal life expectancy.
Right, right. Okay.
We may or may not. It depends, Pat. You want to actually calculate based on what his is and what her survivor benefit be statistically. We had to actually have a whole workshop we did on
self-determination.
But
that would be,
take a look at that.
That would be the direction I would go. What I don't want him to
is
do,
there
Scott.
Do you have a survivor benefit on your pension?
Yeah, but it's half of what it would be.
But half.
Half.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But before she takes it, do some serious research on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
you're going to need to make up part of that survivor. So if you pay off the mortgage, save $1,000 or $1,500 the month that you've been paying on that mortgage. Put it back in the bank. Don't
spend
it. That's
probably all he is paying on the mortgage.
I know.
Yeah.
He's living on $6,000 a month now.
Yeah, I get it.
You're living on $6,000 a month.
Frank, Handsome McLean says pay off the mortgage.
All right, appreciate the call.
Yeah, okay.
We wish you well. And by the way, you know, 9 times out of 10, we recommend people pay off the mortgage.
But I wouldn't want him to spend it because his survivor benefit and Social Security. I would play with the Social Security and
Yes. Because you're thinking about, not Frank, you're thinking about his wife who's 5 years younger.
Yes.
And so something happened to Frank, what's that going to leave? Where's she going to be?
Correct.
Financially? I get it. But, and there's nothing wrong with. Nothing
I know
wrong
you
with,
get it, but there's a bunch of other listeners out there as well. So we're trying to communicate.
Look,
everyone,
if I'm honest, Pat,
not just the
Pat,
other advisor in the
I like
room.
To be an honest individual. So if I'm really honest, I care first for myself, okay, then for others. I would like to be the kind of person that wakes up thinking of others first and me second. But if I'm brutally honest, anyway.
All right.
Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
You have a
to
question,
join the program. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON.
And we will answer your question,
you know, there's,
with the answer that's in your best interest.
There is a financial advisory firm that I actually have some I respect, but they're big fans of having people take out a huge mortgage at retirement. They're they promote.
I know of
people
this firm
to take,
that you speak.
They promote, if you're retired, take out that equity, take out a big long mortgage at retirement.
But it adds risk,
and you still have to make the payments. You don't have to make the payments. It's
and
a great thing.
Psychological risk to the individuals or families.
I don't understand it, frankly.
I don't want to retire with a mortgage, and I actually understand the markets pretty well. And my goal is to not retire with a mortgage.
Well, it seems most people don't like the idea of a mortgage. 1-888-242-6766 is the number. We're in Northern California with Lucas. Lucas, you're with Hanson McLean.
Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Lucas.
I have a question for you guys. I was wondering, what are your thoughts about direct investing?
What does that mean, direct investing?
Yeah.
No, what
does direct investing mean? Because there's 27 different definitions I have heard for direct investing. Actually, 28.
Okay. Well, I was saying, I was just wondering, like, as far as when you invest directly into a stock, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Is it publicly traded or privately traded, this stock?
It's publicly.
Okay, so it's not a friend of yours that came to you and said, listen, I just invented this thing that purifies water and creates energy at the same time.
No.
And the reason I use that as an example is a friend of mine just came to me and said, I'm thinking of investing in this machine that purifies water and and creates energy at the same time.
Creates it. It creates the energy.
By purifying.
Delicious pure water to drink afterwards.
Right on the same thing. What do you think of that as an investment?
So what are you trying to do here?
And for the rest of the listeners, I told him not to invest in a machine that purifies water and creates energy because I don't believe it exists. So what's your objective, Lucas?
Well, you know, right now I'm still working, you know, and I just thought, is it a good to apply in your portfolio? Like, let's say if you've maxed out your 401k already, is it something that you can put in there?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Is it more of a risk?
No. How old are you, Lucas?
I'm 33.
Okay. Right. Oh, you're great. You're awesome. That's great. Okay. And you've maximized your 401k. And are you putting money into a Roth IRA or a regular IRA or funding a child's education account, any of those things?
No, as of right now, no. I have a daughter, but I haven't actually done that. She's actually only one. Mm-hmm. She'll be two in October. So I actually haven't opened it up to.
So obviously one option is to set up a college savings for her and fund that. I think would make some sense in your financial planning if that's something you want to do. But having money set up, so let's say you've maxed out your retirement accounts and now you're saying what to invest in. You just use a different terminology. That's why Pat thought someone was trying to sell you something.
That's what I thought. I thought someone was trying to pitch you a
stock.
What
you're talking about is taking some money that's already been taxed, right? Some excess savings you've got and investing it.
Yeah.
All right. So there's a number of ways to do that. But for example, if you like a stock investment, you could buy a mutual fund or an exchange traded fund that mirrors the broad stock market, the S&P 500, for example, get broad diversification, low cost, highly tax efficient in the way it works. And they can be a phenomenal tool to supplement any other savings you've got.
So I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, after tax dollars. I mean, I've got investments that set up that same way as I know Pat does.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. What you do is go to a discount brokerage firm and you buy a low cost total market.
You have $1,000 you want to open up an account with. You still have $1,000 saved. I want to do this. You can go to one of the online discount brokerage firms, set up an account, invest $1,000
what would be called a total market exchange traded fund or index fund.
Yeah.
In fact, Lucas. My own 21-year-old son does this. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly what his my recommendation. He does that, and he plays penny stocks, which I get a kick out of.
Your son?
Yeah.
Yeah, boy. That's how you're gonna make a small fortune.
Yeah, you got to start with a large one when you're playing the penny stocks. So yeah, just it's a great way to save. Great way to save. And once you set it up, you if you can set it up so it goes in monthly, so you put $250, $500 a month in it, and you'll buy more of the same. So you want to buy the total market, U.S. total market.
Yeah, that's what I do.
And either an index fund or an exchange traded fund, and you want to do it from a low cost discount brokerage. All righty.
Okay.
All right. Keep up the great
work.
Thank
you so much.
Yeah. You do it on a monthly basis, you'll be surprised how fast
that adds
up. If
you're going to do it on a monthly basis, you probably want to do a mutual fund, not an exchange traded fund, just the way they
how they charge the
fee. Yeah, although it's starting to change.
It's changed a little bit.
It's changed a little. But we're taking a quick break. When we come back, we will continue with more of your calls to join us. 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you are sticking with us on this great weekend day. Every weekend day is a great weekend day, I guess.
Some of them.
Listen.
Yeah.
Huh?
Some of them. Most of them.
That's true.
Yeah.
Most of them.
Yeah, most of them.
Although, you know what's interesting? A lot of our work has changed for many Americans. When it used to be evenings, weekends, you're off.
Yes. It all bleeds into each other.
Yes. Now with the iPhone and with laptops, I mean.
Yeah, it bleeds into each other.
Some of us work nonstop. Always working. Anyway,
you know what that makes me think of is that I have a friend who's a graphic artist, and we were camping somewhere, And I saw one of those shirts that said life is good. And I said to him, you know, I don't think that's true. I said, I think sometimes life is just okay. So he came out with a whole series of shirts called Life is Okay.
Did he sell any of them? This was a number of years ago, I remember.
It was trademarked.
And that's as far as he got, the trademark?
No, he didn't trademark it. The Life is Good people had already trademarked.
The Life is Good people did?
We think so. It was trademarked out of a company that was physically located somewhere close to where the Life is Good people. So Life is Okay, And he had these shirts. They were pretty cool. One said it had a bunch of people standing in line for coffee, and it said, standing in line for coffee, life is okay. Or driving the kids to school, life is okay. Because life isn't always good. Sometimes it's just okay.
I was reminded, I was on a bike ride. This is a financial program. We're going to get right back to it here in just a moment with Hanson McLean. But I was on a bike ride with a group last week, and Pat and I both do some road cycling. And sometimes you get cars get close, or sometimes cars are downright rude. And I understand the biking community they don't always act in a manner worthy of
especially the way they dress.
So this guy was telling about this kind of altercation he had with this woman, almost ran him off the road, and it comes up at the stoplight right up next to him and holds up this wooden sign that said the four-letter word you can think of, you.
Really?
Carved in like a wood, he said, like you get at the state fair or whatever, you know, they carve the,
wow,
like this, like the outside funny carving.
That's got some angry issues.
Carrying it around in the car, so whenever she's ready, she just shows it up to somebody. So when you're talking about the life is good and life is so-so, he told me this story, I thought, I'm having a feeling for her, life's not so good.
Yes.
When you're carrying around a sign that ready to go anytime you want, just... Not the finger, because I guess that's not good enough. We all have a middle finger, too, most of us. She's got the wooden engraved sign, just in case you missed any other clues.
I feel bad for her.
I thought, of all things to spend your time and energy on, that's an interesting one. Anyway.
I would not let her drive my kids to school. I'm just telling you that. Just flat out. I'm about like, sorry, mother-in-law, not driving them.
Mother-in-law. All right, let's go back to the calls here. 1-888-2-HANSON to join the program. 1-888-242-6766. By the way, later in the program, we're going to spend a little time on the cyber currencies.
Cyber currencies, yes.
Bitcoin.
And dozens of others.
And these, what even more interesting, these digital coin offerings.
Like people are going to lose like IPOs.
People are going to lose billions in some of these things.
Yeah.
So this is the
next big scam.
It's crazy. Anyway, let's take some calls here at Hanson McLean. We are in Northern California with Stephen. Stephen, you're with Hanson McLean.
Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi. I have a 2.5-year-old granddaughter. She's very cute and photogenic. When she was born, I set up a 529 plan for education, but I'd like to help set up a Roth IRA for future retirement. Now, with her parents' permission, I was thinking of creating a personal services agreement to use her image for my stationery and my business cards for my small business.
I've seen this before.
The income would be used by her parents to set up a Roth IRA and invest the income in a Standard & Poor's 500 index fund for the next 65 years until she retires. Now, assuming the Standard & Poor's 500 index fund provides about a 10% return for the next 65 years, this could be a significant tax-free investment for her retirement.
Are you a retired engineer?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I was a systems analyst.
Okay, well, okay, so you're not an engineer.
My concern would be this: would Social Security taxes, Pat? Can you offset that on for
no
child?
No. That's a good point.
So let's assume she had earned income because she could, as a model, let's say, right?
And how much are you talking
whether
about?
Whether or not this is actually, because this is not in fact an arm's length transaction, because she's your granddaughter, you could have an arm's length transaction ruling against you on this.
But how much are you talking about?
Well, I was just going to start out and maybe do $500 a year or something like that.
So you'd have to pay Social Security taxes on that for both sides.
Yeah, and so Social Security tax would offset the benefit.
Some of the benefit.
7.65%.
On both sides, 15.3%.
Yeah, that's I would offset any tax savings. Here's another way to think about this. Put the $500 into an account, let's say that you just have set up in your name.
Okay.
Or you could set it up in a uniform transfer to minors, UTMA or UGMA account. And when she starts having any earned income at a later date, take those dollars.
And then funnel them into a Roth IRA.
Put it in a Roth.
That's a good idea, Scott.
Okay.
Did you fund your kids Roth?
When they started working, yes.
So I like that idea better. And I wouldn't put my child or granddaughter name on the account. I would just keep it in your own name. So you're going to buy essentially the same investment.
So if you put it in the child's name, once the child reaches the age of majority, it could be pushed age 24 in California, it becomes their asset.
I wouldn't put it in an UGMA or UTMA. How old's this kid? 2.5?
Mm-mm.
No way.
Yeah,
and the reason
either.
Is,
I wouldn't
listen, your kid is, the grandchild is beautiful, right? They're absolutely perfect. At 2.5, they never come home with anyone in a uniform or have done anything wrong, right?
Right.
Kids, I grew up in a middle-class neighborhood. Some people in our neighborhood did great and some not so great. And we grew up and went to the same school and lived in a similar environment, and things happen. And the worst thing you could do is for a 19, 20, 22-year-old is to give them a lump sum of money that would just create more irresponsible behavior.
And frankly, a Roth IRA, you'd have the same issue with the Roth here.
So by putting it in your name, in your own name, and buying a total market or the S&P, it's pretty tax efficient. And just keep it and then decide as the child ages when it's appropriate to give that child the money. Right.
Okay.
And you're talking to a father of four kids where my own trust is set up that it doles the money out slowly to the kids. You normally get to see who your kids are by the time they're 15 or 16. You'll probably, at that point in time, you can normally figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I would do it. But I wouldn't put anything in the child's name for reasons. There's no tax benefit in it to speak of. And the other is I wouldn't want the child to actually have access to the dollars. But I like your thinking. I like your thinking. You're thinking just like a systems analyst.
All planned out, yeah.
When I asked him if he was an engineer, he said, no, I'm a systems analyst. You got where I was going with it.
Okay, yes, exactly. No, you brought up some very good points. I really appreciate the information.
All right, Stephen, wish you well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we've never been big fans of structuring accounts with a children's name on it just because, you know, you just don't.
Yeah, you see all kinds of things.
You don't know how it's gonna end up. So, anyway, if you want to join the program, 1-888-2 Hanson is the number. That's 1-888-HANSON. And we're in Sacramento talking with Matthew. Matthew with Hanson McLean.
Hello.
Hi, Matthew. Hi.
What can we do for you?
Yes, I have a question with regards to required minimum distribution.
Okay.
I'm contemplating in retiring in a couple of years, and I'm 65 years old. And I was just curious, in order to save taxes at 70 and a half, I'd like to forego any higher tax rates by getting the distribution done ahead of time within the 4 years that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good option, or do you have a better suggestion?
It's a good one. We might have a better one.
Yes, that is it. And do you need any income off of this right now, off of the account?
No, I truly don't. My only purpose is to forego any taxes if I can.
Okay.
Save on taxes as much as I can.
And how much is in the IRA?
401k.
Or 401k.
I have about 1.5 mil.
Yeah. I think this is good planning on your part.
And what's your approximate income today?
It's about 200,000 a year.
Yeah. It's great planning. There's not much you can do.
Here's the challenge. You're a resident of California, correct?
Yes.
Are you going to remain a resident in California?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, and you plan on retiring in a year or two?
Yes, at least. Yeah, I'm contemplating at least a year or maybe 2 years.
And will you have any pension income?
Yes.
How much pension income will you have when you retire?
It's about $9,300 a month.
Okay. So you're roughly $200,000 a year in income today. Let's assume once you retire, you're going to have 110 or so in pension income, plus you're going to have Social Security. So you'll be in a little less, but by the time you throw in your required minimum distributions of another 60 or 70,000, you're right where you are today.
Yeah. And you work for the state of California or municipality?
With the university system.
Okay.
Got it. Yeah. So if you're going to do anything, instead of just taking it out, we'd say convert it to a Roth. So let's say you took 20 grand and converted it to a Roth. That's 20,000 less in your retirement account. That'll be subject to RMD. 20,000 that flows through your tax today. But now you've got the money in an account that's going to be tax-free in the future.
But you would only do that after you quit working.
And you'd only do it if you... It was a pretty good chance you'd be in.
So at your income level, there's not. We could clean it up around the edges a little bit. Maybe we'd actually have to do a tax projection on this to see how much makes sense to convert from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA. But it's not going to be a lot. There isn't. Hey, Scott, would it? So if he works, he's working. Can you put after tax dollars into it? Are you using? Oh, you're working at the university. You only have. You don't have a deferred compensation and a 401k. You only have a 401k, correct?
No, I do have deferred. It is. There is a deferred compensation also, to which I'm also contributing into a Roth IRA.
Okay, that was the.
Yeah.
Any ideas, Scott?
You're maximizing your contributions to your 401k, your deferred comp through work?
Yes.
Yeah.
So all in the spirit of trying to make sure that I have a secure retirement. At the same time, the other angle that I'm trying to use is to save on taxes as much as I can.
Yeah. Yeah. The challenge is your retirement, you're actually going to, if you were retired today and your income was less, we'd say absolutely. Do some.
Yeah.
Rather than withdraw it, though, take those monies, just put it into a Roth. You can always pull it out of the Roth.
Yeah, convert money from from your 401k to a Roth.
Right.
But your income will be...
Your income's high now. You're going to be...
Your income's going to be high in retirement. And I assume you have no debt. Your home is paid for?
No, it's not paid for. I mean, that is a deliberate action on my part.
Okay.
To continue with the mortgage to at least have some deductions available to me. So as long as it stays, you know, the deductions available to me 4 years.
The way to do this is to do some tax projections with your full tax return. Sit with your accountant and say, look, let's look at if we converted $30,000 today or withdrew $30,000, would say convert, what would that do? And then just determine your marginal income tax rates, because at the rates you are, it's not just the marginal tax rate we're worried about. You start losing your personal exemptions. You also start losing your itemized deductions. Further, you can be subject to the Obamacare tax of 3.8%. So there's those other factors. So the way to really determine what your tax liability would be is to actually run the numbers, then figure out what's the marginal rate, and then say, all right, let's pretend like it's 4 years from now. I'm retired. I'm 70 and a half. My required minimum distributions, what's my income going to be like there, and then compare it to how it is today. That's the right way to do it instead of just taking a guess at it. But my guess is that when you do that, it's not, you're going to say, I'm not going to bother doing any conversion this year.
I do have one thing to add, Scott. It's not really the Obamacare tax. That's not what they call it. It's the Affordable Care Act.
But everyone calls it Obamacare.
It's not, but the tax code,
Wait, you can't look it up.
You cannot look up the Obamacare tax. What?
As opposed to like Roth IRA, named after Senator Roth.
You could do that.
Okay. So you could Google Obamacare tax. That'll be the first
thing.
Where
in the code, where in the tax code does it call Obamacare? They call it the Affordable Care Act. That's fake news, Scott. You're making this stuff up.
Whatever. I'm just saying that's what everyone refers to it as.
But it's wrong. It's the Affordable Care Act.
It's not affordable.
Well,
so there we go.
Okay.
Where are we going to draw the line?
I can't fight there.
Anyway, good luck, Matthew. Appreciate the call. I want to talk a little bit about some of these digital coins.
There are now dozens of them.
Yes. As a matter of fact, there are companies raising money by issuing coins that almost feel like an IPO, but they go through none of the same vetting by the SEC to get an approval to raise capital.
Yeah. And what do they do with this capital?
Well, I don't know.
Right? Why do they need capital?
So let's kind of take...
They're going to set up a bank, obviously, and try to redeem these coins at some point in time, if need be, with another currency, which presumably would be the currency that people bought them with.
Yeah, so let's kind of, if we step back, we've got, for example, Bitcoin.
Which is the one that most people are familiar with.
Or at least have heard of.
Not quite sure how it works. There's a great documentary on Netflix, by the way, on cryptocurrencies.
On cryptocurrencies?
Yeah. And actually the black web and the role that cryptocurrencies play.
That's mostly what it is right now.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it is that. A lot of it is that. And governments. A lot of it is that.
And, of course, Bitcoin is a digital currency. If you think of the U.S. dollar, the U.S. dollar is backed by what? The full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Yeah. A digital currency.
Which is why, by the way, if you think back a number of years ago, when the credit rating of the U.S. government was downgraded, the bonds, interest rates on the bonds actually the bonds went up in value and the interest rates dropped. Do you remember this, Scott?
Yes.
And the point being is, if the U.S. government is downgraded, their debt is downgraded, just imagine how bad it is for most of the currencies around the world. And that's actually why the bonds rallied. It actually looked good. But it's backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government.
Now, Bitcoin, on the other hand, is backed by what? By the belief that this blockchain technology is going to continue and that Bitcoin is going to be accepted by others at least that price or something greater of value.
Maybe. But
that's what?
That's why you would buy it thinking that.
Yes.
But there's no guarantees of that.
Of any sort.
Yeah. It's a ledger. Blockchain technology is nothing but a ledger.
Thank you.
It is an open ledger. And if people are using it actually to evade the government, in many cases, the government actually can access most of the cryptocurrencies.
But what's happening now, there's new coins, digital coins that are being marketed. And a coin is it's a digital coin from a company that you can exchange for goods and services at some future date. But they're going up in value, and primarily because of what's happened with Bitcoin. And what's the other one that's talked about all the time? Whatever it is, doesn't matter. My son, for example, my son's a college student, and he started following Bitcoin, I don't know, a year ago. And he's got some friend who's invested. And he said to me, oh, I wish I should have, I thought I'm about investing in it. I was tempted, and it went up in this much price. And I'm trying to explain to him not to expect price increases in the future.
Yeah, because the price went up.
Why?
Because someone else was willing to pay more for it.
Something that produces nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't have any intrinsic value to speak of.
And new Bitcoins are being mined every day, so to speak.
Some, but some of the new cryptocurrencies, they're putting limits on how much can be actually mined at any one point in time.
But some of these, for example, these coin offerings, this year they've raised $1.5 billion from investors.
People that bought the coins or invested directly in the company or both?
These are just what the companies have raised.
Yeah, these are the companies that actually go out and raise the money to issue the coins.
So Pat and I say, you know what? As rather than being financial advisors, we are now going to start a company that sells digital coins.
We're going to call Pat Coins.
And that's, I mean, I hate to say it, that's what some of these companies almost have been. It's like...
It looks very, very similar to a Ponzi scheme.
So of the...
And I'm not saying that Bitcoin is a Ponzi scheme. I'm just saying that these new cryptocurrencies, the way they're coming out, look very similar to that.
Of the deals that have... offerings that have gone up in value since they've started out this year, the average price increase is 28-fold. 28 times the original price.
Of what the coin came out at.
Yeah. Now, there's some have lost.
Yes. Let's talk about those.
They've lost about 40% on average.
And some of them have gone completely out.
But we're starting to see some celebrities jumping on the bandwagon.
Because there's no more tequila or vodka they could sell.
No more liquor
clothing. They could sell.
Clothing line.
They could
perfume.
Sell clothing, but now they're selling coins.
Paris Hilton.
Paris coins. Gonna get some of those.
Well, there's always a good person to get your investment advice from, too, right?
Paris Hilton?
Yes. Floyd Mayweather. He's promoted two separate coin offerings.
He is.
So what's happening
that
here, it's not that Paris Hilton and Floyd Mayweather are in the coin business.
They're promoting. They're
promoting coin offerings. So they're getting some piece of the action for helping them.
Yeah.
They're getting coins.
Yeah. Well, you got to give it to Floyd Mayweather. That guy can make money.
Yeah, there's no question about
there's
it.
There's no
yeah.
question. He's not afraid to tell you either. You give me enough money, I'll promote it.
But we look at some of these things, and it
just reeks. And, you know, we talked about this when the crowdfunding came out for investments and these new products.
For smaller companies,
a couple years ago.
They can go public. What was it, the Small Companies Fair and Equality Act or something, whatever it was.
And we talked about how you would see these people out raising money and they would never bring a product to market. In fact, you see it on Facebook all the time or other social medias where they've got a new ice chest and it's got a stereo built into it, and then it you know, has a fan and a mister and then a big screen TV, and all they need to do is pre-sell 4,000 of these and you're going to get one and some equity in the company.
I've not seen those, but equity in the company. That used to not be able, you weren't
able to do that. And what we're now seeing is that there was a big headphone company, the earbud company that just went out 4 weeks ago, went out of business, raised millions and millions of dollars, millions and millions of dollars. And it was an earbud company that was going to compete directly with Beats. And they raised lots of money from small investors and never bought anything to market, never returned any equity. So our point being is you see stories about everyone that did great, but don't get too excited about it. Don't get involved in it. Don't get involved in the cryptocurrency because you think you're going to triple or quadruple your money in a relatively short period. Does it make sense as an exchange, as a global exchange?
Maybe.
Maybe. It actually probably does, right? Because
it's only if it's stable. Right now it doesn't make any sense because it's so unstable.
Yeah, you'd be but big corporations use ledgers all the time, right? Ledgers all the time. This is no different than that, right? And a ledger currency is Scott owes me $100 and I owe him $200, so we just cancel each other and then I give him the other $100. It's a ledger. But don't get all excited when you see this.
Yeah, people get excited when they see big returns that have happened in the past, and they start jumping in. And we look at the people who are buying Bitcoin today.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to end well.
And just be careful.
Maybe it'll end phenomenally well.
If a celebrity is out there promoting some sort of financial product.
It's one thing if they're promoting a burger.
Yeah. Or a tennis shoe, or a shirt, or whatever else you're supposed to spend when you're 24 years old, whatever you're supposed to buy. But careful.
It makes us a little uncomfortable. Anyway, we are out of time. We are here every week at this same on this program at this time. You can also get a podcast of this program if you go to our website. We have a recent blog post that has done well. So when it does well, we think people must enjoy it. 5 reasons your net worth is important. And that's an article you want to see. Just go to HansenMcLean.com and you'll find ways to get it right there. Anyway, we are out of time. We are here next week. We'll see you then. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.